Hello, everybody. My name is Eric Johnson, and I'm here with my kid brother, Derek. Derek, how you doing today?
Pretty good. You know, we were talking about puppies and dogs and stuff in the lead up to today, and I have a quiet house except for a very small puppy that is out in the other part of the house. Basically, that could be my only distraction today. Hopefully not, but you know, if it does, give me some grace.
Well, you could have had a small Korean boy like we had last week when we were out in Erie, Pennsylvania, visiting with our university partners out there. And speaking of which, do you want to introduce our guest for today?
I would love to. But before I go there, that pullover you've got on there is really snazzy.
Thanks.
What's going on with that?
You know, my best clothes were free. Swag acquisitions from various places. And this is my new favorite shirt from Gannon University. Our guest and his right-hand gal made a very kind gift of this, whatever you call this, pullover, I guess, to me. And you got some other stuff. And I believe Rocky walked away with a Christmas morning equivalent number of toys and slime and other stuff as a result. I think he was the person who really made out last week when we were at Gannon.
He was the big winner. There's no question about it. Special thanks to Kathy Roach. If you listen to this, Kathy, I'll be in touch soon to give a proper thank you. But our guest today is a longtime friend. You know, spanning, we're still in debate over just exactly how many years it's been, but it's greater than 10 and less than 20. We'll leave it at that. Brad Gleason, welcome to Running Into the Fog. Thanks for being here.
I'm pretty excited to be here. Great to see you guys both, Derek and Eric.
Long time no see. You know, we just saw one another last Monday, Tuesday, right? Out in Erie. Such a great opportunity for us to get together and kind of celebrate, you know, the partnership that is and has been between you directly with us and, of course, at the moment with the Gannon University team. I see a couple of people on the bridge here, actually. Leilani's out there. Couple of other people from Gannon, I'm sure, are listening in. You know, Brad, you agreed kind of on short notice to join us on this podcast. And, you know, Eric and I have this kind of running connection with people. You know, if you need to call on somebody that would make a great guest on short notice, you should lean into people that, you know, are good friends. And, you know, for that, I appreciate our great friendship. First and foremost, our opportunity to talk about just about anything, you know, and your willingness to host my five-year-old son, you know, on your campus is a true testimony to that. But it's not so much your Gannon background that I'd like to lean into today. It'd be more so, you know, your startup. You have a startup I know just enough to be dangerous about, but this startup is one that I think is really, really cool. From the standpoint of what its kind of big why or just cause is in life. And I know it's still kind of early days for the startup known as the Domestic Monitoring Initiative, but would love to have you kind of start out this podcast episode talking about DMI. You know, as I understand it, it was a dying wish of your mother's that led you to this. Which is obviously makes it even more personal for you and for those around you. So maybe we can start there, you know, here today, March the 29th of 2023 and dive in.
Yeah, thank you, Derek, for setting the stage on that. Domestic Monitor Initiative, or what we'll just call DMI going forward, it spurred, both a dying wish, an awful lot of luck, and some really good advice along the way. Has gotten what was an idea into something that I think is going to be a huge problem solver down the road. And specifically what I mean by that is you had mentioned a dying wish my mom, and she made a point as we're, this is kind of a tearjerker, but she was donating her body to cancer science next to me as we're filling out the application. And she asked me to do one thing for myself. And for some, that might be a shiny car. but for me, it was really something to think about. And when I did, doing something for myself meant turning that back to what I'm about, and that's doing something for others. So I started to noodle on that, and I didn't knee-jerk into any particular effort. I just started to process. And as I did, I have one life mentor who happens to be in human services in our town of Erie, Pennsylvania. And his name's David Jenner, great guy. So I watched him take a crisis call one particular day as we're out for beer and pizza. That's one of his jobs. So there's legislation in every state to take a crisis call. And I saw my friend Dave taking one of those. We call it an Act 302 call. And that's an involuntary admission for somebody. So the team calls them up and they talk through that. And I had seen him do that maybe a decade before. And it just so happened the timing came together where I saw this again while we were out. But he obviously was in a private space, so I was just observing. And it hit me that that process is full of cognitive bias. That process is not fully accurate. And I was even wondering if that activity, taking a crisis call, could be prevented, not knowing enough behind that. So I took that as my charge that I was going to try to replace that experience with AI to see if I could attack it in all those ways. So that's really how that was born, as I set off to go to Panera's, whip open a PowerPoint and start to figure out what that meant, how I could build the mousetrap to start solving that problem.
Wow.
I'll stop there for a moment.
That's awesome. And
I'm sure you've had plenty of challenges along the way in the, five years, somewhere in there?
Yeah, I've had a litany of challenges. One being that I really didn't know what I was doing. I didn't understand the path in front of me. I can go on and on with a number of those things, but some of the things that really equipped me to take the problem on was I'm a tireless worker. I don't leave something half done. It's something that hit me when I was very young, and I set a course at 17 to do today what I could put off for tomorrow. So as I've built that work ethic, I put that towards this project. And I said, even though I don't know what I'm doing, I'm going to figure it out and I'm not going to let that make me pause. And I've had really good input from a lot of people. Everything from this is a great PowerPoint, now build it. And I thought maybe a PowerPoint was good enough at one stage, right? But even as you're building it, the questions start to come, the critics start to surface, and the problem's a pretty big one when I started to really define it. And a lot of people were saying, well, you're too early, or your problem's too big. And the answer is, thank you. I'll listen to everyone, follow no one, right? I'm going to take my own particular path on this one. But then I had a whole bunch of luck along the way. So the life mentor of mine, he was near retirement, and we started to go down this road, and he said, whoa, 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 whoa. This is work. He goes, I'm getting ready to retire. He goes, I'm not going down this road with you. So that really took the air out of me a little bit. And so I thought about it and I said, there's one person I know who can pick this up. And I turned to her. So her name's Amy Danzer. And I said, Amy, what do you think? And she's super conservative, not a knee-jerk reaction person. And she stood up and shook my hand right on the spot and said, I'm in. That was really cool. So that was another piece of luck I didn't see coming. And so she built our algorithm, our secret sauce. And there's a lot to unpack, but I'm happy to just kind of jump forward for a second and just say that we are now beta testing in Jamestown, New York, with severely mentally ill adults. And we literally kick off Thursday with 105 days of beta collection and analysis.
Wow. Like tomorrow?
A week from tomorrow, sorry.
A week from tomorrow. Wow, that's impressive. Well, if I can jump in for one second, I've got one little piece of housekeeping to add in. But first, I want to thank Sarah for her comment in chat. What a tribute to your mother. Sounds like you got your desire to help others from her. My condolences on your loss, Brad, from Sarah. And we'll talk more about your mom and sort of what your hopes and dreams have been in your career and what you're doing now. And we'll let you kind of guide that conversation. Those of you familiar with our format here today, this first half is called Unthinkable. Our guest is here to help you think things that you haven't thought of before. And so that's a big part of our kind of theme in this first half. These POAPs are crypto tokens that you can scan and keep in your wallet and gain access to privileges later on. And if you are watching us on social right now, I'd like to remind you to go on over to openrecon.com. Look for this little running into the fog, RITF link at the very top, and register to join this bridge here and gain access to all of the archives down below. So you can see we're streaming here live on the website too, Brad. So with that quick little piece of housekeeping, there are a couple of perspectives on what it is you're doing with DMI that I'm really curious about. And one of those is, every entrepreneur or startup team, founder team, has a winning aspiration, something that they really want to achieve in their time at the helm. And then they also often benefit from having what we call a just cause, something they can't achieve in their time at the helm, something they know is going to outlive them in their role at the head of the company. Can you talk a little bit about the sort of creative tension created by the winning aspiration to produce business results and then the just cause, which is really to produce results in the world
for DMI? Sure. And great question. The creativity is I already have version 2.0 in mind, and we are going into beta with version 1.0, right? So we have a particular set of feeds that go through an algorithm to give us a certain awareness. But I want an enormous list of additional feeds coming in, and I have a very good list of use cases thereafter in areas of adults severely mentally ill, children and youth, veterans. I see pre-release employee assistance programs. So that list is pretty extensive. The total available market that we calculated when talking to investors exceeded $2.8 trillion, which is wow. Huge TAM, right? Yeah. But the goal for all of that is much larger than my abilities. So I also have to know what my limits are, to your point, Eric. So I know that I can sell. I know that I can get this built and we can reduce suffering and save lives, get predictive, get into the diversionary care space and show great metrics. But if I want to make the impact I know I have to make long-term, I'm going to have to get this into healthcare systems that are beyond my expertise. That's the tension, is I know there's a point in time when I'm going to have to recognize that and allow somebody to pick it up and run with it at a larger scale.
Lovely. Excellent. By the way, Terry Thiel has volunteered to be our first interlocutor during Unspeakable in the second half. If you are watching this on social, openrecon.com, running into the fog link, register, come on board. You can become an interlocutor too. And we've got two slots left open for those of you who are on the bridge already. Derek, carry on.
So two things, one a statement and another a question. You mentioned, Brad, having a significant total addressable market. I suspect you're going to get there mostly because you have the advantage of there's part of you doing this for your mom. So this isn't just you doing it for yourself. You're doing it for someone else and for the legacy of your dearly departed mother. That would be the statement. The question would be, you just got done talking about how you are in business, your co-founder. I think you've termed Amy super conservative or very conservative. As a startup, there's a dichotomy that one plays between having a tolerance for risk and, you know, an understanding that at some point the risk has to turn to a more conservative approach for you to have that kind of long view thinking, that long view capability. So how do you balance the two, especially with a co-founder who I suspect is wired quite differently than you are when you think about it that way?
Yeah, I think I'll start with the benefit is that my business partner and I have known each other for at least three decades, and that's unusual, right? And I use the term that young bands break up. Young partners have a tendency to also break up over time because they haven't figured out how to deal with conflict resolution. With my business partner and I, she takes a lot of care in picking the moments to stress her conservative side or her concerns. So we do that, first of all, offline. So if it's just the two of us, she'll say, have you thought about this? I understand you're saying this, but please measure the other side of that equation and think about these other concerns. Because my job is to say the glass is half full, and her job is to say, oh, measure that again. Right? And so we really do a kind job back and forth. And I think we've really picked up a nice, I call it a project rhythm on top of that. But if it wasn't for her ability to pick careful moments to share her perspective, I think it would be a lot rougher. But we really have a good communication style between the two of us. And I'm just grateful we have that. Very few partnerships can say that.
Mm-hmm. And for the record, Amy, if you listen to this recording someday, or if you're out there listening right now, I've heard nothing but extremely positive commentary. And, you know, in a lot of ways, maybe you balance Brad in some of the same ways Eric or I might balance one another, you know, here. So you do need, you know, a partner that can kind of keep you honest at times, yet be completely all in on the reason why you're doing it.
Yeah, if I can even jump in and just plug her an additional time. We went through a very challenging development cycle between part-time developers moving over to offshore development teams. And during the same time, her mother was really struggling with her health to the point where we would be on a development meeting. She would have to go on pause and take a phone call, come back in, go on pause, take a phone call, come back in and say, guys, I'm sorry, I have to go to the hospital. I'll be back for the next meeting. So she managed a very difficult last chapter of her mother while we're going through the development of our business. So she's quite a trooper on top of it. And she was able to keep the interests of our business moving while managing the decline of her mother. It was something exceptional. And that just talks a lot more about what kind of person she is.
For sure. A couple comments from the chat. JP said, what Brad calls luck is really his hard work, his selflessness, and his mental acuity, a true innovator. I think you know who that might be behind that name. JP, you're welcome to join the interlocutors in the second half. And Kurt says, that is unusual. Most business partnerships don't make it. There's an old adage that having a business partnership has all of the disadvantages of a marriage and none of the advantages. So Kurt, very insightful.
Oh, I love that saying.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, it does take work. I'll tell you that much. That I also hear that about marriages, right? In order for it to work, you have to commit to communicating and staying on top of issues. And Amy and I have found a way to do that. It's not perfect, but we have found a way to make sure if we disengage, we re-engage and to keep our eye on the next milestone. So again, very lucky. My girlfriend and actually went to high school with her partner. So that's really cool too, right? So we go out to dinner when we're all in town. It's a nice experience all the way around. When I was in town, a couple of weeks ago, I went out to dinner with them as well. So we try to have a social side to how we know each other, just so it's not all business as well. And I'm sure there's days she just doesn't want to see my face or hear my voice. But other days, we do get along. It's there's a genuine appreciation for each other, which you need to have when you're going through the tough blows of starting a startup, because it's constantly pivoting and it puts you under stress in different ways every day.
Well, you know, I can speak from experience in saying the longer your business partners with somebody, the more tolerant you get of that constant, you know, togetherness mm-hmm. and cheek to jowl. And Derek, you know who I'm talking about in that remark. Maybe someday you and Amy will even write a book together about this experience and reflect back on it and reflect back on the difference that you've made in the world and in the lives of the people that you've touched. Which, you know, really strikes me. I really kind of want to get us into that, what the app does. And if you are able to share, tell us a little bit about how it does it. Sure. We've got about 10 more minutes here on social before we cut to the more intimate private bridge. So with that, tell us what the app does and how it does it.
I guess I'll start with the one adage that you have to make sure you define the problem right. And sometimes we're very lazy in that step. So the way I came at that solution was, let me understand the population and let me understand a little bit more about how I can gain insights based on things in their world. And what occurred to me was that this population was more predictable than people would assume if you pulled the right data. So the, what we're trying to do, because we have a utility patent, we responded to five U.S. Patent Bureau office actions. So we don't have the utility patent yet, but we're very close. So I can speak confidently about at least the data that we're using, and that is nomadics. So what are your patterns, right? What are your movements? That gives, because what our tool is really meant for the caseworker. So having awareness of what your caseload is doing from a geolocation and pattern perspective is very insightful. Now we take that information, and it has a lot of weighting and a lot of meaning behind all of that. And we push that through our algorithm, which is also uniquely customized to each client. So then that meaning really gives us awareness. And it also has a push notification that goes out to the caseworker in case somebody is escalating to the point where they might be approaching a crisis level. We want to avoid the crisis event. We better be pushing a notification so that diversionary care can be effective before a crisis occurs. So additionally, we have sentiment coming in. So Facebook, Twitter sentiment, we're not reading what somebody's posting. It's the meaning of the content and how that affects the algorithm that we've customized for that person. The combination of the two give us a really unique insight into somebody's stability, right? And if they're escalating, then you can reprioritize your caseload as a case manager and go in there and divert in a way that only a case manager can. You have the license and you have the context of what's going on in that particular person's life. So you know how to intervene the most careful way possible without being aggressive, without being cued, and to have the least collateral damage. If it's legal, if it's conflicts, somebody gets harmed, we want to avoid all of that. And there's enough of that going on as we continue to hear, just like the shooting in Nashville. And I'm not saying we can stop every school shooting. That's not what I'm saying. But we think a percentage of the population can be monitored, and a percentage of that can be diverted. And that saves a lot of money, a lot of suffering. That's our goal over time. But we got to get through the beta. And then we have a whole bunch of other data in version 2.0 we want to implement while we're getting version 1.0 into the marketplace. And hopefully that gives you a sense of how the data flows and what our intentions are to keep that moving.
So that algorithm that you talked about, linger on that a little bit. Can you, whatever you can unpack of how that algorithm is customized for the individual, you call them a patient? You don't probably just call them a case, do you? Or maybe you
do. We use the term client, but everyone has, you know, maybe you say something a little different.
Yeah.
So the goal is to obviously both use the DSM, right? So that is the book for a mental health diagnosis, and healthy people and unhealthy people, you know, can be labeled underneath that, but you can have dual diagnosis. You can have a mental illness and an addiction, for example. So we have the ability to customize based on that diagnosis to all the weighting that's unique to our algorithm. So we weight movements. So if you don't go to your med monitoring when you should, that's a real high thing. So that's actually very site specific, but also if patterns over time don't have movement when it should, or they're in places they shouldn't be, that could be telling, and we can block off certain areas, especially for HIPAA compliance. There's certain things that we block off, like where do you sleep? Well, we block that off so that that's not known. And we have a full-blown set of HIPAA support with our business. Just a shameless plug, we have a HIPAA attorney. We have a cyber HIPAA compliance professional helping us with all of our data from end to end to make sure it's encrypted and compliant with both CMMC compliance and HIPAA compliance. And then we have a really great development team, both offshore and locally, to help us along the way to make sure that we're following HIPAA across all fronts as we do this. So we spend a lot of time and money on that. But the goal across all of this is optimal awareness around those patterns and getting more and more accurate at the meaning of that, because algorithms deter over time. So you have to be working on the algorithm at all times and make sure it's as optimal. And so that's where our focus is. This beta testing right now to make sure our original customization is accurate and that we're weighting all the information coming in as best as possible. And once we have that calibrated, We're looking forward to market.
So, now, Brad, maintaining our mental health is arguably one of the world's biggest challenges, especially coming out of COVID, right? And so when you think about what it was about your story or your capability that grabbed the attention of the people you'll be beta testing with in Jamestown, New York, can you expand a little bit on, you know, why Jamestown, New York? What was it about your pitch to whatever institution you're working with there? And how do you maybe use that win, if you will, to gain other beta testers and see this opportunity for your app to expand?
Yeah, I really appreciate the question. So the beta partner is called STEL, but what that stands for is Southern Tier Environmental Living. And they're a housing developer and a case management support entity in Western New York. And in Jamestown, they have a particular set of facilities around town. We're working with five of them. And when that particular population in one of the buildings leaves, they don't have any awareness of what goes on till they come back, and what comes back can be concerning. So we're gonna, so they recognize the awareness. The CEO, Tom Whitney, and I have known each other for a long time, and he's a college buddy of a mutual friend of ours, Shelley Fern. So there's the connection for you, right? So I love Shelley. Tom is a wonderful human being, and he's got a great staff. So the woman named Lynn and Jen are the two that we work with, and they're very tireless and interested in this, getting into their support system. And if it wasn't for their desire to embrace this tech adoption, we'd be looking in a totally different place, a totally different town, maybe a different population. But to be honest with you, COVID and the pandemic crisis that was laid down triggered STEL to take on telehealth. And so once they went through that, they found religion that the technology adoption was very useful. Before that, they really didn't have that belief. So I think if we would have done this earlier, we wouldn't have gotten very far with STEL. But because of COVID, they're very interested and motivated, and they've been great partners so far.
Necessity is the mother of invention, as we say often. And, you know, that the world that existed before March or so of 2020 was a different world. And that world, as it sort of dissolved away, we're now kind of casting a new world here. What's changed sort of before and after? And by the way, I realize I'm going to give you only 2 minutes to answer that, Brad. What's changed in the macro environment that you've had to cope with, because we're cutting to unspeakable, and we're going to say das vidanya to the Russian botnets here in about a minute and a half. So what's changed in that pre-pandemic to now?
I think just being removed has an enormous different dynamic. So we have to measure all sorts of experiences as in-person and removed. And we are subconsciously doing that and more consciously doing that. So we are an alternative that's attractive because things have changed. People are willing to take that remote option and bring it into the workspace. That's clear, but there's a lot more examples. Obviously, high schools are struggling with it, daycare is struggling with it, restaurants got hit very hard. But we're all aware now that we have to measure things differently. In case there's another crisis, can this be remote? Right? And does this have a remote capability? What if I have to go back to working in my home? So people are thinking about technology in those ways, which just wasn't even a consideration 3 years ago.
Well said. Well, the time has come, everyone on social. If you haven't upgraded by now, I don't think you're gonna. We have a little bit of a shift to do in the show. We're shifting from unthinkable to unspeakable. And that means, Brad, you can start cussing if you want to. You can say whatever you want, because there's nobody that's going to cancel us over here. We have a very experienced interlocutor picking you up here at the start, but we're going to say, Dasvidanya, Rosiskaya Siatvarplatov.